I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hello, I'm Scott Soschnick.
And I'm Evan Novy Williams, and this is The Caitlin Clark Show, sports business podcast, The Sportacast.
Little music with that. This is the kid, like, you know, we need
like the Dick Van Dyke Show.
Yeah, we need a little something. And as I was saying hello, it occurred to me, I never ever change it up really. And it reminds me, do you watch CBS or any, what are your morning shows? Do you watch a Sunday or a morning news show?
I don't. I've watched Meet the Press occasionally, but.
At the start of CBS, all right, like Gayle King does, it's your world in 90 seconds. And I said to myself, she never changes that up. It's the same intonation. And by the way, I like the little segment, but it's the same every day. And I realize I do it too. So for the next time, I'm going to change it up next time. I don't know what I'm going to do, but nothing fancy.
We can change
big.
It up so you do the intro. How about that? How about, I'm Evan Novy Williams.
All right. Yeah, I could do that.
Caitlin Clark needs a nickname, by the way. I'm thinking about on the fly here what I was going to use. Does she have one?
Not that I'm aware of. Why does she need a nickname?
Because everybody who reaches that level of stardom and popularity and crossover celebrity has a nickname, right?
What's nobody calls LeBron James the King. It's LeBron.
But that was his nickname, King James, Greek Freak.
I don't know. I'm not sure. Like now I'm thinking. I got
Andrew Wiggins had Maple Jordan. Yeah, I think I think you need
Connor McDavid has no nickname. It's just McDavid.
That's true. Actually,
it's actually McJesus.
No, McJesus.
McJesus. Yeah, we can do McJesus. All right, give me Austin Matthews. God, I'm going to go down the list. Brock Purdy is just Brock Purdy.
Austin Matthews has big Poppy.
What's Mahomes?
I'm not sure, actually. Maybe he doesn't.
We may have gotten it right there easy.
Either way,
But you say Caitlin. I know
say
who you're talking
Caitlin,
about. Caitlin Clark
needs a nickname, yeah.
All right. Well, I don't know if she needs nicknames or if she just
it's
needs...
It's working for her, to be very clear. Yeah.
Whatever. Although, let's use Caitlin Clark as a great example for what we want to start out with is, LSU and the docuseries on NIL. I mean... I'm wondering what would Caitlin Clark get if somebody really wanted to focus a series just on her and went through the school, because Daniel Libet did a great job, got a hold of the contract of this docuseries with LSU. The school is going to be paid $1 million just for its cooperation.
Yeah.
And the athletes themselves, and we all know that's Angel Reese and Livy Dunn, those are two high-profile athletes at LSU. They will also become compensated based on sort of how much they do with the show, and that ain't going to be a little number.
Yeah, let's talk about LSU, and then let's go back to Caitlin Clark after that. It's a fascinating the contract that he got. It's a really interesting look at all the power dynamics now in play in college sports. It meshes with this other trend that we've seen so much of, right? Which is these behind the scenes documentaries and a different kind of unscripted but not live games look at famous players and big time sports. As you said, LSU's getting $1 million for this. It's a drop in the bucket. The athletic department, according to our database, last year $192 million in revenue. I'm sure they'll pass the 200 mark in fiscal 2023. That number is not huge for them, and the Brian Kelly, the football coach, is not being paid at all for his participation.
Yeah, that was it. None of the coaches that will
none
be
of them
the,
are
going to get paid,
and
which I find
Brian Kelly is paid quite well. Yeah. But I would bet that when all the dust settles, the people who are getting the most money in the aggregate in this thing are going to be the athletes.
See, now this is where Evan, like this. Yeah, I know you're tired. I know, but when you say when all the dust settles, it would have been so much better. If you had just said when all the gymnastics chalk settles.
Oh, God.
Right? I mean, because
sorry for not thinking of that.
Think about this. I mean, we all know this is a two-athlete. Like, you can talk all you want. Like, name one men's basketball player at LSU. One.
Right now?
It's not
now?
Stanley Robertson. It's not Shaq. Yes, right now.
Yeah, I can't do that.
Yeah. Exactly. Name a – give me a football player at LSU. Who do you got?
I got.
Who do you got? Who do you got? LSU football. You're telling me about.
Yeah. Keyshawn Boutte, is he still there?
I have. I have.
I just like the name.
That sounded like you.
Neighbors,
by the way,
Malik Neighbors. I got one.
If you say so, got I don't. One. You could have made something up, and I'd be like,
no,
but
that's not
me. You said Boutte. I'm going to go Neon Boudreau. Do you know that reference?
I don't know.
You don't know the Neon. No. This is where there's a whole bunch of people right now going, come. They're root. Our listeners root for you because we encounter them and they're like, stop picking on Eben. Yeah, Neon Boudreau.
Okay, I know the movie. I just looked it up.
Yes.
I love the movie Blue Chips, by the way.
Okay, but you know why I'm bringing it up?
Because it's LSU. Shaq?
Shaq, yeah, because Shaq also. Yeah. I mean, we'll get there in a minute. But, you know, we all know this is going to really focus on Angel Reese and Livy Dunn. Like, these are the stars of the show.
And to me, it just, again, underlines how uneven this economy was 3 or 4 years ago, right? If this company, these companies wanted to make this documentary about LSU athletics in 2019, there would have been no avenue at all to compensate players in this capacity. And as we're saying, they're the central piece of the documentary and are probably going to share in the most of the economics when all is said and done about making it. Just shows that and I'm not going to call this a free market because it is certainly not, but even in a somewhat open market, the money is finding its way to the athletes over all of the other shareholders that have made the money in the past. And I think that is definitely worth pointing out.
I thought we could use the word quasi there. You know, I always like to throw in a quasi whenever I can. But, I mean, Shaq is part of it. Like, one of his companies, Jersey Legends, is what
part
of the production. Co-producer? What are they? Co-producer, co-producer on this? His company. And I think while they were looking around, do we want to do this? Having an alum who has an interest in the school, certainly, and even the school said this, that, you know, made it easier to move forward with the project.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like there's also a tremendous amount of LSU marketing that they're going to get out of this, right?
Sure.
I cannot imagine.
It's a big commercial.
I could be wrong. I cannot imagine there's anything bad about LSU that is going to come through in this documentary. And as a result, there's an argument for LSU's getting $1 million. Again, it's not much, but there's an argument for this just being the benefit that LSU gets. I wrote this story a couple of years ago about the Clemson Disney movie, the one about the defensive back who his kid brother came to live with him because there was no parent for the kid brother. And they turned it into a Disney, not Clemson, but someone turned it into a Disney movie. And Clemson wasn't paid at all, even though they allowed the film committee group to use the stadium for filming. They used the marks and the logos.
They knew the benefits would come.
They obviously understood that the thing is essentially a 90-minute commercial for how much Clemson fought for this kid in the face of the NCAA. Kind of struggling with the idea that he was going to be either adopting or taking in his kid brother while he was playing football. So LSU, in some ways, I think you can argue maybe doesn't deserve to get paid. And you can make this argument for players to a degree as well. It's going to make Angel Reese and Livy Dunn, I'm sure, look good and add to their profile as well. But the real winner here, not financially, is Clemson and the Tigers athletic program.
Now, I would say, however, looking at what happened with Michael Orr, you have to wonder if there is the risk of being blindsided with one of these.
See, I see what you did there.
I'm glad you did. I hope our listeners did as well. I will once again, for fun, just say the word quasi.
Yeah. So let's go back to Caitlin Clark for a second, Scott.
Yes,
we're recording this on Wednesday. Pod's dropping on Thursday. Barring something insanely unforeseen, Caitlin Clark is going to break the NCAA scoring record, most likely in like the first quarter of their home game.
First 3 minutes.
Night. Yeah, exactly. she's been the best player, one of the best players in college basketball for a few years now, but the commercial buzz around Caitlin Clark right now it's astounding. From betting, from the ticket market in places where she just played at Nebraska, they had their first sellout game ever in that facility. They played at Maryland, first sellout game for Maryland. She's setting records in road arenas. The tickets at Carver Hawkeye Arena in Iowa, Iowa City are going crazy.
I was talking to a buddy who works in sports. His son goes to Indiana, and I guess they're playing in Indiana, you know, as you know.
Yeah.
And he said his son, who has not been to a single women's college basketball game, is like doing anything for tickets because they want to see the Caitlin
totally
show.
1.8 million people average watched the game
on
Super Bowl Sunday. Most watched women's basketball game ever on Fox. There's Caitlin Cams now following her around. This is going to build. She's going to break the record. They will get a bump there. This is going to build through women's March Madness this year. And Scott, we can discuss it because I think it's a fascinating business story. She's sitting on a choice right now whether she she wants to go back to school.
Yep.
Or if she wants to go to the WNBA, the Indiana Fever in the Midwest have the number one pick. I cannot imagine they wouldn't take her if she was around. But tying back into the NIL
conversation.
Can you
imagine with the number one pick in the WNBA draft,
someone
the Indiana
else.
Fever selects somebody else's name?
The team that is number two, you just see them high-fiving in the conference room or whatever. But yeah, I think there's at least an argument to be made, and I think we should probably storify this in some form at Sportico. But the calculus between... you can argue, I think, very easily that what she's doing at Iowa right now is a bigger platform than she will have in the WNBA next year.
Yep.
From a viewership standpoint, from all the things that we're talking about. The NIL money, she's doing quite well. She's repped by XL, which is Peyton Manning's agency, Tiger Woods, a whole laundry list of others. She's doing well in that department. But, yeah, it's a really interesting question that you don't see often on the men's side about how not just the money side, but how big is your impact as a professional athlete versus the impact you're having as a very phenomenal college athlete. And she's going to have to make that choice, and it's going to be really interesting, I think, to see where she nets out.
Doesn't Caitlin have a deal with Omaha? Peyton Manning's Omaha
production? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. You can see how it
part
all...
Of the label
are we
there,
triangulating right now?
I think we may be.
Triangulating right now? Peyton XL. Yeah. Caitlin Clark XL. Peyton Omaha. Caitlin
just
Omaha.
Played in Nebraska. Oh, my gosh.
There it is. There it is. Somehow, the only thing we couldn't bring in was Warren Buffett. Like, I guarantee you Warren Buffett has met with Caitlin Clark, and somehow she's...
Would not shock me.
Yeah, somehow she's a Berkshire Hathaway shareholder. It's just... I don't know how to quantify, like, what she can earn as a college athlete versus... I mean, you can't just look at, like, okay, she gets paid a salary in the WNBA, and... you said from a promotional platform, you'd have to argue that the college game in Iowa, what she's doing right now, will give her way more national TV appearances. But if I'm Kathy Engelbert and I'm at the WNBA, what's my best argument to tell Caitlin Clark? Like, or is it you don't make an argument? You're like, all right, we wait a year. Just let the legend grow. You know, let it become Jordan-esque. And just let it grow in the college game. And I mean, they have a ready-made star. That is one of the big deals about making kids go to college, even for 1 year, that David Stern used to point to, like the value to the NBA, that they didn't have to do anything to market these players. Like, you go to high school, I mean, Kobe was a little bit different, but once you play 1 year of college basketball, especially if you're a megastar and you qualify for the NCAA tournament, I will give you the perfect example in Carmelo Anthony, wins the national championship as a freshman at Syracuse, comes into the NBA as a big name, household name. NBA didn't have to spend a nickel on marketing Carmelo Anthony. It is the exact same with Caitlin Clark now in the WNBA. People will want to see her.
Do you think that there's a lot more tension on, rightfully so, on women's college basketball and women's sports now? There's more investment going into it, networks, media. I said women's March Madness coming up because for one of the first times the women's tournament is allowed to use March Madness. There's a lot more infrastructure and investment and eyeballs around women's basketball. Caitlin Clark is obviously tremendously talented. I'm not taking anything away from that. How much of what the kind of the hysteria we're seeing around her do you think is a product of the changing viewpoints and investment in women's basketball? And or do you think this would have been exactly the same if she had been 5 years younger and was a star at Iowa in 2018?
Don't believe you can look at anything in a vacuum. Like the atmosphere surrounding women's sports. And the important thing, what if advocates for women's sports said all the time, you'd hear some Cro-Magnon say, nobody watches women's sports.
Yeah.
Okay. Are we comparing apples to apples? Is the championship game on an over-the-air network in prime time? Or was it on a cable network at 9 p.m.? Like, you'd never have the, but all of a sudden, you're starting to see the even comparison on a real, you know, a broadcast network or an ESPN on the mothership at a prime time or at the same time, and you're seeing audiences for the women's game explode. So, I mean, which led to what? Not sure. Is it Caitlin's talent leading to people wanting to see it more so they put it on? Or was there a desire, you know what, let's even the playing field and see what we got here. Let's really see if increased marketing, increased expenditure really does result in the numbers growing. And I would say it's more towards that way. That you had to get an uneven playing field for this explosion to happen. And then all of a sudden, an uber-talented player like Angel Reese, like Caitlin Clark, they can become, let them show the personality, let them show their skill on the same plane, and you get megastars.
Agreed. So let's transition to stay in college is sports. A big piece of media news in college sports, according to The Athletic, the college football playoff nearing a six-year extension with ESPN and only ESPN, $7.8 billion, $1.3 billion per year. Again, this is the expanded college football playoff. There's been a lot of talk, Scott, over the past few years about whether ESPN, which is, as you know, a dominant force in postseason college football.
Say it again. I tee you up every time because you were the first, years ago, you were the first to write, for people who don't understand, ESPN is not just a broadcaster. They really do control this ecosystem. One last time, though, V. Williams, explain to the world the role that ESPN plays in selling sponsorships, etc.
You nailed it there. Not only are they broadcasting the vast majority of games, including all of the biggest ones at the end of the year, but they are selling commercial sponsorships for many of the big bowl games. All of those commercial rights, the naming rights for the bowls, like the Tostitos Bowl, the Tostitos Fiesta Bowl, that's a deal that ESPN brokers. There's so much more that they're doing production-wise, corporate sales-wise, TV-wise, a lot more than people understand. And I think, as it is in any industry, that makes some people in that world nervous, right? A little bit. The ESPN and Disney have had some well-documented struggles financially. There's been questions about whether it was better for college football to have two groups that are competing against each other for production and technology and investment in talent, et cetera, if that would be better. And in the end, at least right now, it looks like college football playoff is going to stay as it expands to 12 games or 12 teams. It is going to stay a ESPN-only platform.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
And I think that's interesting. Another one, a stat I saw on Twitter, and I forget who tweeted it, but I think it's interesting. If you tease this out per game, ESPN under this extension would be paying about $118 million per playoff game moving forward. The NFL-Amazon deal, according to John Arand and Puck, it was $125 million for that one streaming exclusive NFL playoff game. So pretty comparable there, 118 to 125 in terms of the value of each college football playoff game under the new system to ESPN and the value of, to Amazon, an exclusive NFL playoff game as well.
Well, have you heard the adage in SEC country, they say there's only two seasons? Do you know what the two seasons are?
Football season and football off season?
There's football season and there's spring football season.
Spring football season.
That's exactly it. And this is why. Yeah. I mean, when you talk about the aggregation of eyeballs, you don't look at the college space as sort of one game, right? You look at this combination of windows and how many people watch and how much sponsorship goes into it. And obviously the eyeballs are there. It's a premier property. There's the NFL, professional football. And then, I mean, what are we calling it now? Is it, do I get to use the quasi, qualifier again? Is this junior professional football? What are we talking about college football now? I think just call it professional. If you're looking at it from the metrics and all of the data points that you would qualify professional the NFL on, sponsorship, media, it certainly belongs on that same plane.
Yeah, and we're seeing the dollar figures obviously to match that. The last deal, the ESPN college football playoff deal that's currently underway, was signed way back when the college football playoff started, Scott. It was more than a decade ago. And college football was obviously a big deal back then, but I don't think it had reached the kind of cemented status of the second or maybe third most valuable sport on U.S. television.
So if you looked at it as a collection, we're seeing big jumps there as well. Yeah, I think people, but back in the day, even if you looked at it as a collection, people were looking at this as the sort of like the number two property to have.
Yeah. And again, the NCAA, which argued for so long that if athletes got paid in any way, it would diminish the value of college sports or the fan fervor for it. All the numbers that we see, athletic department specific, that we're collecting right now for media rights for top tier conferences and the college football playoff, everything indicates that college sports has never been more popular or more valuable commercially.
And it was also going to ruin women's sports, remember, which asks, you know, which begs the question,
oops,
with all of the money sloshing around, you know, when do the professional money makers come in? You know, we have FSU
soon.
Utilizing JP Morgan to bring in some private equity to accelerate their departure from the ACC, where they can go really get some more money in one of the biggies, the Big Ten or the SEC. You and I would not be surprised if in the very near future, the conversations between some private equity firms and the conferences yield some sort of tangible result. You know, we'll stay on that. But by the way, are you wearing an Intuit Dome shirt?
I am wearing it.
It's a very comfortable fabric. I think I have that one. It's a very comfortable fabric.
We got this from the Clippers when I was out there, I guess for the Super Bowl in LA, right? We swung over just down the street to see where the early construction had been on the Intuit
yep.
Dome.
This
was sitting in my parents' closet, and I was down there this weekend, so I ended up pulling it out. Yeah, it's a great sweatshirt.
I only bring it up because the Intuit Dome was awarded an NBA All-Star game in the near future.
Yep.
And we do have an NBA All-Star game coming
good
up.
Transition, Scott.
Thank
very
you very
transition.
Much. You didn't see the obvious. That wasn't obvious. You had to work a little bit, but I got you there. The basketball world will be bringing itself to Indianapolis, home of lots of basketball, Hoosiers and the like. I love the Technology Summit. Kudos to David Stern for starting the Tech Summit, Adam Silver for continuing it. It is one of the best gatherings of the year, where the NBA and a lot of its partners bring their high-level executives. And I believe, was it last year in Salt Lake City, where we saw the Shaq 3D hologram, and it's just cutting edge stuff. And you got to remember, I believe it last year, I'm not going to say who it was, but one of the owners said sports leagues have got to really now add to their line items for research and development. You've got to add to R&D. The NBA has a technology group here. They spend tons on R&D. It's an investment you have
committee.
To make. You just have to invest in this stuff to understand and to present the game in a way that the future fan wants it.
The NBA, I think, of all the leagues, I think you would probably agree, has done the best job in that regard, I think, trying things. And the All-Star game is a perfect example of it. Every year, it seems like there's at least one piece of interesting, far away futuristic technology that Adam Silver, like David Stern did before him, will get on stage and talk about. And some of them hit, and some of them are really big and innovative, and you see the impact, and other ones don't. We've had in the past few years the AR experience, where you can put yourself into a game and watch it that way as an avatar. We saw the changing jersey that was could change from away to home or player's name on the back, depending on what it was. There's been a lot of VR stuff. This year we're going to see, not for the game itself, but for the skills competition, the LED court. The court with the glass on top, where they can change and put different designs underneath it. It would not shock me if there was an NBA game on
it's
that
sort
court.
Sort of like
at
the small screen experience, but literally on the court. Stats, social,
exactly.
Everything. It's like watching your other screens while the game is in there, or stepping on it on the court.
If I were a betting man, there would be a LED ball or something like that at some point soon. Just it's the one part of the game they haven't really iterated on yet. And some of these things, again, are successful and some aren't. And when they're successful, they also don't need to be successful for that long.
Doesn't have to be a commercial venture right away either. You're just sort of testing things out.
Exactly. And the NBA Top Shot, I think, is a very good example of it was the fervor was short-lived, but only one league in the U.S. got to capture it, right? Yeah. By the time the NFL tried to get involved, by the time MLS and all the other leagues that cut their own deals, either with Dapper or somebody else, by the time they got into it, the moment had essentially passed. We'll see if it comes back. But the NBA actually did for that maybe 6 months where Top Shot was incredibly hot, see and reap the benefits of that product. So again, it doesn't need to change the game forever. But when things get hot, if you are at least semi-prepared for it, or if you've played around with it to start, you at least get that first mover benefit. I think Top Shot is a really easy example of that.
Well, speaking of things getting hot, have you ever tried the VR in sort of the athletic training? Have you done any of that?
I haven't, no. None of the baseball pitching and stuff like
all
that.
All right, well, I did the Sense Arena
for goalies.
NHL goalies, just for fun. You know, whatever. I was there. They're like, you want to try this? I'm like, sure, whatever. I can't tell you how cool it was. I mean, you're putting on the equipment, you're holding things. One time I felt really bad. I went to make a blocker save, and I literally threw the controller. Like, I was like, oh, my God, did I just break the whole system? I'm so sorry. Like, don't worry, it happens all the time. But the funniest part is I'm sweating. My legs are weak. I'm spent. You know, I'm not you. I'm not an ultramarathoner. I'm totally spent. So when we finish up and I'm looking at the stats and everything, I was like, so how long ago? 15 minutes? They were like, 4. I was like, that was, but you're tracking the puck. So you're going left and right. You're moving, just pushing up, down. I'm like, that was 4 minutes. I'm exhausted. So anyway, I mean, that means nothing, but what the heck? I thought I'd bring it up. NBA All-Star. I love the idea that we're going to see Steph Curry going straight up against Sabrina Ionescu in a 3-point shooting contest. This is the kind of stuff that you have to change. You have to make it interesting. These things get stale pretty quickly. Like even dunk contest stuff, you know, you got to figure out how do you keep it fresh? How do you keep it interesting? I love the idea that, you know, Sabrina had that moment where she buried whatever in whatever competition she was. Was that the WNBA All-Star? I'm not sure. But she just buried like almost every shot, and then Steph commented on it, and then that blew up. So why not put them head to head? Great idea.
And to illustrate your point about how stale things can get, I bet they won't do this exact format next year because it will feel stale after having done it once. I had an idea. It kind of shocked me thinking about the NHL All-Star Game, which we discussed a few weeks ago, how successful that skills competition was with a smaller concentration of the best players in the world with a big prize at the end. I wonder what the number, and give me your thoughts, what the number would need to be, what Kia would need to put up for the dunk contest to make it so that the biggest stars, the best dunkers in the league would want to participate. What gets Zion Williamson, LeBron James, and Giannis Antetokounmpo to because they obviously don't want to do it right now or not willing to under the current format.
And I'm not sure, but by the way, I'm not sure their teams want them to do it.
And maybe it's impossible, but I do believe there is a money that someone, a sponsor, can probably dangle get that back, get the All-Star, they get the slam dunk contest back to seeing some of the most famous and popular players in the league dunking.
Yeah,
and
you want feels Jordan like going against it. Dominique Wilkins going against, 100%. You want Sean Kemp, you want the best of the best, big names, big dunkers in there doing their thing. I got it.
Have you looked at the roster now? The dunk contest players?
McClung.
Yeah, one of the guys, McClung, is not even really on an NBA roster, right? Yeah, like that, and the other ones participating. I'm going to pull up the list right here. It is not a. I know obviously Jaylen Brown is a star. Jacob Toppin, who I thought was Obi Toppin.
Yeah, they were.
Turns out it's Obi Toppin's
that.
Brother. Yeah, he's probably not even the most famous Toppin. And Jaime Jaquez, who was a good player in college at UCLA. I'm not an NBA fan, but. Yeah, we're Mac McClung, Jacob Toppin, and Jaime Jaquez, alongside Jaylen Brown, headlining the All-Star Game is not the ideal setup for that event. And I do think that with the right, at least some kind of big seven-figure number behind it, that you could get some of these stars back to the table.
Now, do you want the money to go to the stars, or do you think to the charity of their choice? Like if you did it, like, hey, LeBron, your promise school gets 10 mil. Like winner gets the charity of their choice, or you think they want it in their pocket?
I think.
Or a component of both, maybe a little bit of both.
I think you need it in their pocket.
So you're saying it's got to go to them. Okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure if being able to compete for $5 million that goes to the charity of your choice is enough to get. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. I could be wrong. But yeah, I think it needs to be more direct because these guys are getting paid so much more. If you look at the salary of NBA players relative to the pay of the All-Star game, or of the slam dunk contest, there was a time when the slam dunk contest was – I'm not going to say a significant portion, but it was enough money that it was augmenting your salary. Now players get paid so much money, and the slam dunk contest doesn't pay that much more than it used to. It's not a significant part of your salary, right? And I know money's not the driver of all things, but there is a price out there that would work, and I think someone should do that.
Hold on, I want to bring that quote back sometime. Another show. I know money is not the driver of all things,
but it's the driver of most things.
That was a ridiculous statement by Novi Williams. Okay, great. We'll bring that back in another show, dude. I got 2.5 minutes. before I have my conference call. And I said I would mention his name. So I have my call with, you know, our CEO, our immensely talented CEO, Dick Glover. So I made him wait till the end of the show. I hope he's sitting there going, he didn't mention me. He didn't mention me. Glover D, there you go. We mentioned Dick Glover with 2 minutes to go in the show. And we will close with, you and I talk about platform companies all the time. You wrote a piece about Matt Ishbia sort of bringing an umbrella organization now over his holdings. Seems to me we have the next, and you know, I don't, in no particular order, Monumental, Fenway, Haslam Sports Group, Pagula Sports and Entertainment, Kroenke Sports and Entertainment. Am I forgetting anybody quickly? Are those the major ones I needed to say?
Yeah, I mean, you got, I think we're pretty good, right? You got HBSE, yeah.
Oh, I didn't say HBSE. I didn't. Sorry.
Harris Blitzer.
Yeah, I didn't say Harris Blitzer, right? Okay,
big
there's
one
another
there,
one.
Obviously. This is, in some ways, this is not huge news. I don't think all that much operationally is going to change with suddenly all the teams that Matt Ishbia owns and the real estate holdings he has being under a single umbrella. When I talked to Matt, I talked to him very briefly ahead of writing that story. All he wanted to talk about was culture. Right, the idea that he felt like the Suns and the Mercury weren't as invested, employees of those teams, for example, weren't as invested as they could be in each other's success, right? And this creates one team and one goal. But the interesting conversation we did have is about expansion of this group. It's called Player 15 Group, by the way, the 15th player on a basketball roster being the last person on the roster, which is what he was when he was at Michigan State under Tom Izzo. But he was very open about interest in other sports teams, leagues, investments. He was, as you know, kicked the tires on the Broncos, kicked the tires on the Commanders, was looking at an investment in the Bucks. He hasn't been shy about other interests. And he said, as he told to me, he's dedicated to Phoenix right now. Most of his assets are there, but he's willing to look at opportunities in other leagues and other cities as well. So
unlike Ted Leonsis, who only wants CC.
Unlike Ted Leonsis.
This is my look when I say you're disregarding the fact that I said I had 2 minutes to my conference call with, did I mention Dick Glover?
Okay, well, shout out to Dick. I don't know where you can find Dick on social media, but he might be there. Scott, you can find late to his meeting at Soshnik. I am on Twitter at Novi_Williams. The show is produced by Aaron Greenewald. Thank you very much, Aaron. Sportico's digital media editor, Cora Veltman, would like you to know that you can find the show at Sporticast, which is the hub of the Sportico Media Network.